You know, I've had people on before, and we've talked about, abductions, being taken. Some of the people had experiences that were very good after they, under hypnosis, maybe realized some things. And then there are those that have had experiences that still can be quite a mystery, and they're still trying to figure it out. My guest this week, his name is Byron Lacey. Byron's been taken going back to 1955 when he was a very young child. He's written a new book about all this, and he joins me on the topic of alien abductions. How are you doing, Byron?
I'm doing very good.
Glad to hear that. Now, you were taken way back in 1955, your first time?
Yes, sir. 1955. I was 5 years old.
Wow. And you did you have a lot of memories of that, or how do you know?
I remember the entire incident. Now, after it happened, my parents wouldn't talk about it. And it just, like, there wasn't very much in the media that I was seeing. And when I was 5 years old, there was nothing about aliens, so I didn't even know about space aliens. But do you want me to tell you what happened?
Sure, absolutely.
This played out over three evenings. My mother would always take me into the bedroom to put me to bed, probably around 9 o'clock, maybe even eight. And then my parents would watch TV. And she, one night, she put me in bed, tucked me in and said goodnight and left the room. She turned out the light, but there was light coming in from the hallway. And there were three little men standing on the side at the foot of my bed. When I laid down and looked towards my room, there they were. I was shocked. I didn't know what they were. I wasn't really afraid, but I called for Mama. And she came into the room, turned on the light, walked into the room, and, of course, they were gone. So I told her what it was, and she told me everything was all right. Go to sleep. So I went to sleep. The next night, the exact same thing happened. And she came in. They weren't there. And she left. Told me goodnight. Well, the third night, it happened again. I called my mother. She came in the room. They were gone. And she sat down on the bed next to me, and she put her hand on top of my head. I had a burr haircut, and I could feel her hand on my head. And she said, "Son, don't call me in here anymore, because they're not going to be here when I come in the room. You're going to have to learn to deal with them yourself." Hmm. And then she tucked me in and left the room. Well, as I turned back around and she'd walked out, they were there again, except that also there was this, he looked like Captain Hook.
Really?
Which was one of my favorite characters, was from a picture book by Disney with Captain Hook in it. And now I couldn't see his face very well, but he did have on his pirate patch, and he had a huge hat on. And a cloak, a shirt from that time period, and a vest that sort of fanned out. I couldn't really see his legs much. He started dancing around the room. And my bed, well, first, suddenly I could not move. Hmm. And I looked at my hands, and they weren't tied, but I couldn't move. And my bed started to rotate. And somehow the room got bigger. And this guy was dancing around, and he had very angular movements that were not graceful at all. He was dancing around the room, and the little guys, somehow they were at the base of the bed, even though it was rotating slowly in the center of the room. And all of a sudden, I was getting ready to panic. I didn't like being not able to move. I didn't like these strange beings in my room. And then all of a sudden, they were gone. Hmm. I could move. Hmm. they were not there. The room was the right size. Everything was back to normal. And I even thought, was this a dream? And then I went, no, I wouldn't be calling my mother in the room 3 days in a row for a dream. But I just had to let it go. I'd already been told not to call or not to mention it again. So this, there's a word for this, and I don't remember it. But this event, I could not relate it to anything that had ever happened to me. And I didn't forget it, but I didn't really know what it was. And so it just was something I'd think about every once in a while. And
you kind of buried it.
2009.
You buried it away then, I'm guessing. Is that what happened, Byron?
In a sense, I filed it away because it was still always accessible to me if I wanted to remember it.
And that's happened to many, many people I've talked to, myself included, is that we're almost, especially early on when we're non-believers, or we don't have no idea what it is, because back then, who was reporting about abductions in 1955? Nobody, right?
Nobody. Right.
And that, who was it, the Betty and Barney Hill incident?
Yeah.
Which became well-known. That was somewhere in the 60s, right? The middle 60s or somewhere?
I believe so.
So you were pretty much, well, I guess there had been other UFO incidents now that I think about it. People maybe, you know, that we had different accounts going on of UFOs. The 50s were a big UFO period, were they not?
They were, but we didn't have a TV.
So you weren't seeing all the movies. You weren't coming up with this and going, hey, Mom, I just watched a movie. You know, there's a difference. We know when we're awake and when we're not. I had a visitor one time in a, because I asked for it. You know, I think you can call him forward. Do you believe that,
yes.
Byron? And so
yes.
I wanted to see what one of those looked like. And I was sleeping at my mom's house, and he showed up just like you. I was frozen, and I couldn't move. And I thought, oh, my goodness, what am I going to do? And then all of a sudden, this thought hit me. If I don't want to hurt this being, he'll let go of me. And I said, no, I just wanted to see if they're real. And then next thing I know, I was moving again, and then I was out, lights out, and I don't remember anything. And for years, I wasn't sure if that was a dream or if that was the real thing. And then I realized, you don't remember your dreams unless you wake up right after them. You don't remember. I don't, at least. And so it made sense to me that that was something more than a dream. And I've seen UFOs, so maybe I've been taken like you. Now, you talked about, and maybe this will help people a lot too, marks. I saw the pictures you sent me. You've had a ton of them over the years. What are some of the things that you notice if you've been taken?
Well, I check my body every night before I go to sleep to see if I've hurt myself in any way, scratched myself, my cat scratched me, bumped into something. I always make note whenever I bump into anything as well of where it is so that I'll know. But the bruises I make and the bruises they make are totally different. They make a round bruise that's pretty close to the size of a quarter. And I get a lot of mine near my knees. I found one in my armpit a while back. It was so well hidden. And I don't know why they're hiding things because I've talked to them, but that's beside the point. That's just the way they are. Then I get these punctures from time to time, and I'll find them in the morning. Well, everything that they do that I find early in the morning when I first get up. Bruises, punctures, and they're about the size of a hypodermic needle. Okay. And usually there's 2 to 27 of them in a pattern. Usually like just line after line in a sort of a rectangular shape.
Wow. You know, Byron is writing a book. The name of his new book is called Chosen: Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. And you take all this information, a lot of pictures, I'm guessing, that because you sent me a lot before we did this interview. And I was amazed at how many different pictures. How long have you been chronicling? Is that a word? How long have you taken down this information?
Well, I've had a lot of strange things happen in my life, and they've been so strange that they've stuck with me. In 2009, I discovered that I was abducted, or abducted by aliens. Now I've now changed that to visited. Daryl Sims and I had talked about that, and he thinks I'm more of a contactee than an abductee, because contactees have more positive experiences.
Mm.
So in 2009, when I realized what was happening, I started writing things down, and then something made me start thinking about things that had happened in the past. And I'm going, oh, wow, those were not guardian angels that were saving my life. Those weren't ghosts in my house that were doing those things. These are things have been done by aliens. Also, there were a few times I thought I had become really psychic, because I was putting together a small plastic train building, a building for a train set, and it was a brick building in construction, and it had a ladder leaning against it. And I wanted that ladder because I was going to glue it down. Well, I reached out towards it, and I was 3 inches from it, and the ladder moved away. It kept its feet on the table, and it's only like 3 inches tall. But it kept its feet on the table and moved over and landed against my finger in a perfect slow arc. And I thought, wow, I wanted that thing so bad that somehow I levitated it. So I tried again, and it worked.
Wow.
I did it 4 times, and then I thought, okay, I don't want it, because I wanted to see if somehow I had built up a static charge in my hand and it was magnetic. I said, I don't want it this time, and I reached down, and it didn't move. I tried again on purpose to move it, and it moved. Then I could never, ever, ever do it again.
Isn't that something? Wow, I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody ever describing that. You literally had, and I think, you know, all of us, maybe in our highest state, Byron, maybe could do those kind of things. So you were tapping into something. They had something. They'd given you something, I guess,
but
in a way.
They did it.
I'm sorry?
I think they did it. I think they were playing a joke on me. There was another time, and this happened in like, when I mention dates, the date in the book is always the one that's correct. I may get it wrong
okay. When
I'm talking.
That's okay.
But in around 81 or 82, this video club opened up in Nacogdoches. And my wife and I joined, because you could pay a flat fee and get one free video tape every day to watch. Then you turn it in. Well, they decided to change, and everything was listed under our birth date. They decided to change it to our social security number. I went in, and the woman told me what they were doing, and I said, well, and it's very unusual for me to talk like this, but I said, I want my birth date. I don't want you to change it. And she said, well, I'm very sorry, but we've got to. That's what we're told to do. So I went, well, okay. So they changed to my social security number. I left. I came back the next day to turn in the tape, and they wanted my social security number to look it up. They couldn't find it. It wasn't there anywhere. And finally she said, well, have they changed it? And I said, yes. And she asked me my birthday. She looked up my birthday, and there it was. So then we went through the whole thing, although I didn't complain. She changed it. The next day I went back, the same thing had happened.
Huh.
It had reverted back to my birthday. And she said, I don't understand this. Everybody that's a member now has their membership under Social Security number. But anyway, so she changed it again. The next day I go in, and the manager's there. And he asked me for my Social Security number, and I tell him, and he looks it up. It's not there. So he looks it up by my birthday, and he goes, well, I don't know why this is happening, but we can't change yours, so we're just going to leave it under your birthday. And I said, okay, thank you. And I left there thinking that I had wanted my birthday so much that somehow psychically I had overridden the computer.
That's cool.
Well, after 2009, I realized they had done that.
So they had done it for you. You don't think you had it? Because some people have told me they've developed psychic powers, and it's common, it seems like, for a lot of people. They become more gifted after they've been taken.
Yes. Oftentimes I know things, and for some reason it's early in the morning while I'm still in bed and my brain is just sort of talking, my ego is talking, but it'll say something strange, and I know it's me, it's my thoughts. It'll say something strange, like you're going to have a flat tire, or something like that, and it's not always bad. And it will happen that day. And then I've worked as a psychic on two different psychic hotlines, but I really didn't like it because of the I had one woman that it was just really hard for her to let go of the fact that she didn't kill her dog. I mean, she thought she did, and I told her that it was an accident, that she didn't kill her dog, and it was just, it was very sad to me, and there were other things similar to that, yeah, but not as bad. But
that would be the hard, that would be hard to do that. So you started, you've been sick before, you've been hit by a vehicle, there's several times in your life, and you feel like something has interceded because you probably should be dead by now, right?
Yes. In fact, that was what, when I first found out in 2009, I had a very tough time of this whole thing. And one day I was sitting there and I'm going, well, I just wish they'd, what would my life have been like if they had left me alone? And then I'm going, I'd be dead. So it became difficult for me to hold any grudges against them at that point, and even now.
You had, what was it, in 1952, you were operated on
cancer.
For sarcoma.
Yes, I never had lupus. I had a sarcoma in 1952, and I had probably had it since birth, or at least I started getting sick at 1 year old, and it was like my development just stopped. I stopped sitting up. I didn't want to eat. They took me to a doctor over and over and over again, couldn't find anything wrong. Finally, the doctor insisted that I go to a specialist in Austin. And Dad told me that when the doctor came down out of the elevator with me in his arms, he was as white as his doctor's coat. And he told them then that I had cancer, that I had sarcoma, that no one ever lived from sarcoma, and they were going to operate as quickly as they possibly could, and that took place the next week. And he told my parents to go home and make another baby so it wouldn't be such a blow to them when I died. And I'm still here.
So were they shocked that you survived this? Were the doctors shocked?
Yes. They said I should have already been dead. And another thing is the cancer grew as a long stalk into the space in my bladder rather than what it normally would have done would have been it would have grown in to my bladder and then spread into other organs. But it didn't do that. It grew just the opposite of what is normally happens with that cancer. And, of course, they did not have chemotherapy. They did not have radiation therapy. They only had surgery. So they went in and cut it out, and I'm still alive.
Yeah, one of more than one time that you've had, I'm guessing, illness. I haven't read all of it. But then I was reading 1963, you got hit by a car, and you got hit pretty hard, and you barely got hurt. What happened there?
That was a very strange experience. I was walking home, only I was on my bicycle this time. We would either walk or ride our bikes to school. And it was about 4 or 5 miles from our house. I was with two of my friends. We were on bikes, and we had to spread out into a line because we were on the side of the road. And I saw this huge Dodge suddenly coming straight for me. And it was, I couldn't do anything. I saw the car coming at me, and then I was on the ground, and I was rolling. And I was rolling head over heels, and every time I would come up, I would see the tire and the fender about 2 foot away from me. And I rolled over 3 times, and each time I looked up, the car was coming at me. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything, which is probably good. If I had been able to move, I probably would have been killed. But then my body straightened out and flew through a barbed wire fence, and I got one little scratch on my left bicep that's about an inch long, where one of the barbs dug into my skin. And then I landed on the ground, and I was about 5 or 6 feet from the car. And there was a policeman at that area who was helping as a crosswalk guard, and he was right there on top, and he had already called an ambulance as the accident was happening, and asked me if I was all right. He tried to get me to stay still because I kept trying to get up. I said, I'm fine. I just need my glasses. He looked around and found my glasses and handed them to me, and I put them on. They were not broken. Well, they put me in the ambulance, stopped and got my parents, and took me to the hospital. Stopped and got my mother. My father came with the car. They made me spend the night in the hospital just because the doctor said, you know, sometimes a hurt from a car accident doesn't show up until the next day. And so I said, okay. So I got to stand there, and I was hit by my teacher's husband.
Yeah. That's a good way to get some good grades then.
I made an A that year. Anyway, they get me the next day, and they said, well, we've got a new bike for you. And I said, I don't want a new bike. I like my bicycle. I want my bicycle. And he said, well, that's just not possible. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, we'll show you. So we got home, and there was the new bicycle on the front porch, and it was an American Flyer, red and white with a light, and a place for somebody else to ride on the back, a basket, the whole works. It was great. So then I said, well, where's my bike? And he said, well, come around here. He took me onto the carport. I was very shocked because, like, I had no injuries whatsoever. The bike was bowed. If you were looking down at the bike, it would look like a crescent moon. And it sat up. When I laid it down on the ground, the seat was about 2 feet. When I laid it sideways on the ground, the seat was about 2 feet in the air. That car had hit dead center where I was sitting, had bent the bicycle like that, and had not hurt me at all.
That's amazing.
Everybody said they thought God had saved my life.
And you believe otherwise?
I didn't know at that time. I thought it was really strange. That's usually when these things happen, I go, gee, that's really strange.
That's what I say, too. That's exactly what I say. Well, that's really weird.
So I realized later I wasn't even on that bicycle when it got hit. I was somewhere else, and then I was put onto the ground and rolled because there were so many people around. They obviously had to make it make sense in some way.
Oh, interesting.
And nobody ever actually said they saw me get hit. They saw the aftermath.
So you really believe
me rolling.
You really believe you were taken, and this is only a speculation on your part, or do you have memory?
Well, I do not have memory of being taken, but one night after 2009, when I was communicating with them psychically, briefly for amount of time, I said, I want to know, and I thought, I've got a question that I will find out answers from. I said, I want to know why you saved my life so many times. And the being said, "We want you alive." Hmm. And then he was gone. I'm going, that's no answer at all. Of course you want to be alive.
Right.
God, why? So now in 2010 or 11, or maybe 2009, 9 or 10, I was singing at a bar with the band that played there. I would sing 3 songs with them whenever they played. I'd started singing and playing guitar some, but mostly singing, which was sort of out of my nature. But I went through some changes after my first experience with them, and I became braver for a while. So I sang my 3 songs, and I decided to go off the front of the stage instead of the steps, because there was just some stuff in the way. Well, I reached the edge of the stage, and I'm about to step off into the air. In fact, my foot is already moving, and I realize that my right foot is caught under a speaker cable that runs between the 2 monitors, which just happened to not be taped down that night. And then I go, expletive. I didn't say that, of course. Mm-hmm. I'm about to die or just get really messed up, because I was going to drop head first onto the concrete floor.
Wow.
That was a foot and a half below the stage. Well, the strangest thing happened, and it instantly reminded me of the bike accident, because I could not move. My body was moving, but what it did was it pushed up with my right foot. My left foot was already in the air, and it twirled me backwards, which dropped the cable off of my shoe. And I never would have thought to do this, to be truthful. I just thought I was going to die. And it launched me into the air backwards, and I landed on the floor in front of the stage. And it was like being set down.
Hmm.
I didn't move. I didn't move backwards to catch myself because of the backwards momentum. It wasn't there. I've tried this at home, jumping off a 1-foot object, and every time I end up stepping backward 1 or 2 times to catch my balance. The audience was completely silent. I mean, I had everybody's attention. And the singer, he goes, "We rehearsed that, ladies and gentlemen."
Mm-hmm.
And they all accepted that and started laughing and drinking and talking and everything. And I looked at him and I said, I couldn't have done that on purpose if I'd wanted to. And I left. And I was thanking them as I walked out the door, because I knew it was them that had saved me, because what had happened was actually impossible.
So this is not, I mean, we've come a long way in a short time in this interview, because we went from you being taken early on to you communicating with them. And there, I guess there's a lot of questions involving how did that happen. But I want to go down the road of discovering, when you discovered that you had missing time. You have a story talking about your car not only missing time, but actually winding up on a different road, didn't you?
Yes. Well, one of the times I had gone to Houston, and I had a friend with me, because I hate driving in Houston, and we had gone to a HUFON meeting, which Daryl Sims, who is titled the Alien Hunter, he's a friend of mine now. I had communicated with him several times about my experiences, and he wanted to meet me. So we went to this meeting. Well, on our way back, there's a city, and I think it's Diboll, and it's very well lit, because Temple East Techs had at one time had their main office there. They may still, and they had put in a lot of money into that town. Edges down the middle of the rows or on the sides, big street lights where normally there wouldn't be any street lights, and the big metal ones. You can't miss that town, is what I'm trying to say. It's there. Well, my friend goes, when are we going to get to Diboll? And I said, well, I was looking at the clock, and I said, well, we should be there. And then I looked, and I went, oh, we are there. I see the overpass. And he goes, there's no overpass in Diboll. And then we realized that we're looking at the overpass on the loop in Lufkin.
Hmm.
And we were only like not even a mile from that overpass. Instantly, we had missed Dieball and another city called Burke. Well, the next day I went to his house and he said, that couldn't have happened. We discussed it and I said, let's go look. So we went to Lufkin, and when we got there, they were doing construction on the road that we would have been coming in on. And they weren't working that day. They had all these big, huge orange cones lined up. You had to stop, make a right angle turn, and then immediately left, make a left angle turn, and then you could go on and get to the overpass. We never did any of that. So that was pretty much proof to us that our car had been moved.
Mm.
And it still took the exact same amount of time, plus a little extra, about 15 minutes, to get home.
How many ships have you seen, you think, in your lifetime? How many different ships?
I have seen 3 ships undisguised or minimally disguised. Like, the first one was in 1961, and I saw that with a class. We were in music class, and we had a substitute teacher that showed up. I had never seen her before. I'm 11. I was probably 12 by then, and I fell in love with her instantly. She was beautiful, but nothing unusual seeming about her. And she wanted to go outside since it was such a pretty day. It was at the tail end of winter. She thought we should go outside and do some calisthenics. Well, this was music class. We didn't really want to, but we didn't complain. We went outside. There were about 20-something of us. So she had us line up on the gravel driveway. She stood under this huge oak tree. And we started doing side straddle hops, and then we just all froze, because up above the tree that she was standing under, this thing that looked like a nuclear submarine, the George Washington nuclear submarine, I believe that was the name of it, and it looked like it had the battle deck to the battleship Missouri attached to the underside. But there were no guns. All that would have been guns on the battleship were just rooms.
Hmm.
And it was huge. It was taller than the oak tree, and it was only about 10 feet above the oak tree. And it moved forward, and then it was gone. And she said, that was nothing. Let's get back to work.
Really? She said that was nothing?
That was nothing. So how did she even know it was there if it was nothing, you know?
Why? Do you think she was an alien?
Either that or a hybrid. You know, she could have been an alien because she would have just disguised herself.
Wow. So they disguised themselves to make themselves look like us, you're saying?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And some are probably go ahead.
Are they projected into our minds?
I can believe that.
They don't really have to disguise themselves. They just have to fiddle with our perceptions.
Yeah. If they can control us, it seems like they have the ability, and I'm not saying every race, there's different races here probably visiting, but the grays, the one I saw was a gray, and I'm guessing you've seen the grays. And
yes.
All he had to do is look at me. So I believe they do it with a thought. Their thoughts are so advanced, how they harness them and control them, which we all could be someday, just like them, I believe. We just aren't as evolved. And they can focus a thought at us. And I was frozen in my bed when I sat up. It's like, I can't move. I can move my mouth a little bit, but I can't move my head hardly. And I'm freaking out.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, he let me relax a little bit. So... And I really believe, I didn't see any weapons. Some people say, well, they must have some kind of device or weapon. No, I really believe that if you open up and use your brain, the receiver, transmitter that it is, 100%, if we all did that, Well, we've had people appear in our past that have done amazing things. Jesus and Buddha and all these other ones. So why not the aliens, too, if they've tapped into something? I want to get to more of this about, you said chosen. Do you really feel that you're chosen? Because that's the name of your book, Chosen Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. Do you think it's a good thing they chose you, or is that just a name you came up with?
Well, when I found out what was going on, I went to a Dreamland Festival with Whitley Strieber. And he had it that year, and just a couple of months after I found out what was going on. And there was a medium there who was the technical advisor for the movie medium, the television show medium. Marla Fries was her name. And I had taken a picture of my father with me because I was determined that I was going to be one of the few people that got a reading. And I actually sat at the very front of the audience when it's my inclination to sit pretty much at the back. So she asked for somebody to do a reading. Everybody had their hand up, and she picked a person fairly near to me, then did that for them. And when it was over, she said that her relative, mother, said goodbye and that she loved her. Then it happened again, and she ended it the same way. Then I had my hand up, and I had the picture in my hand, and she picked me, and she said, well, you knew what you were doing, didn't you? She put the picture on her thigh, on the front of her leg, above her knee, just the length of her arm down, and she fell down. And she said, wow, he knocked me down. And she said, did he fall or something? He's trying to tell me how he died so that you will know it's him. And I said, yeah, he broke his hip, and it was supposed to be to jump to the side. I mean, he broke his hip. My sister called me and told me, and I just knew, and I said, oh my God, he's going to die. And she said, no, he's not going to die. They do thousands of these operations. Well, he wouldn't let him give him the anticoagulant shot because he thought he was in a prisoner of war camp because of the anesthetic.
Mm.
And 3 days later, he died. A blood clot in his leg let go and killed him.
Mm.
So that was one of my psychic warnings there. Anyway.
So how do you feel? Go ahead.
I said, does he know about the aliens? And she booms out, I know everything. And I said, yep, that's my dad. And then he told her that he knew about it and that I was the fourth generation of our family to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
So our whole line had been, or not our whole line, but at least my great-grandfather, when he came here from Ireland, that's when they started messing with us, apparently. And then obviously some other people in the line, and he came to Marble Falls in 1850, but he had been here a few years later. He was 17 in 1850.
You said you communicated with them. How did you learn to do that?
Well, I when I found out what was going on, I thought, I need some proof. I need to know I'm not insane. This was in 2009, and I spent about 5 hours every day walking back and forth on this easement that runs through my woods under electric lines, going, are you taking me? I want to know what you're doing. Why are you doing this? And I finally boiled it down to, I want to know if you're taking me. I want, and I said that over and over. I said it out loud. I said it in my mind. And like I'm saying, for 4 or 5 hours a day, I was pretty manic about it. Well, this brings us down to my first experience with them, because they answered me, but in a way I never expected would happen. I sang my first solo set at a restaurant near my house out in the country, the Country Kitchen. And the first song went pretty good. And then the words just started disappearing from my mind before I could get to them. So I made up 3/4 of the words to all the songs. And I wanted to leave, but I had these two huge amplifier speakers and equipment. Like, I couldn't just walk out of the room. So I stayed, and when I took my first break, this guy comes up out of the audience. His name was Jimmy Daniels. And he said, "I'm a guitar player," and he is, or was, "and I'm going to help you." He said, "I want you to get your music out of your, get your words out of your case. I'm going to play, and you just look at me like we're in the living room and you sing." So we did 10 or 15 songs. The last song I sang was "Hey, Mr. Spaceman" by the Byrds. And then I went home. I wanted to go to bed. It was near midnight, and I tried, and I couldn't sleep. So I put on this CD that's an entrainment CD for helping you meditate. All of a sudden, I was in this hammock, but it was hung from side to side instead of end to end. And I was laying in it, and it was weird looking. It almost looked like parchment or leather, and I felt of it, though, and it didn't feel like it had ever been alive, which that was a relief to me, although I didn't know what was going on. There were several blankets in the hammock, and some of them were pretty old, and some of them were not. I pulled myself out of the hammock, and I didn't have any clothes on because I had not worn any to bed. Everything looked hazy and foggy, and at one point I realized that I also was not wearing my glasses, and I had not been wearing my glasses when I went to bed. Well, the floor felt, I couldn't tell what it was made out of. It almost felt like metal, but it was warm, and I was glad for that. And there were two other hammocks in the room, and I started to go look at them when I suddenly heard, you know what, okay, there are two other hammocks in the room, and I go, "Oh, expletive, I'm on a ship." I knew where I was. And then I started to look at the other two hammocks, but I hear footsteps. And I go, "Oh, crap, I don't think I'm ready to see aliens at this point." And I reached over, I ran over to the hammock because there was no place to hide. And I started to climb in. Then everything went black and then faded back in, just like a cut in a movie. And I was laying on a table, a metal table, and there were three grays standing to the side of me. And there was a thing that I had never seen before that was 7 feet tall, had this huge elliptical head with eyes on the side of it. And I was about to freak out, and I heard it say in my mind, "Do not be afraid." And I wasn't afraid. And it's not like I took his suggestion. He controlled my nervous system and made me calm. Then suddenly I was in my bed looking at what appeared to be a holograph floating in the room at the foot of the bed. Now, I've discussed this with Daryl Sims. For a long time, I thought the whole thing was just a vision. And he goes, "No, it's not a vision." And he tried to explain why it wasn't. And he also told me that they can make you see through their eyes. And they can also make you think you're wherever they want you to be. So I'm looking at me on this table and these guys, and suddenly the picture turns black and white, or I thought it turned black and white, and then it zooms in on me, and I suddenly realize it's X-ray. I am looking at myself in X-ray, and of course they were not in the picture. I thought that was interesting too. Well, and they did the alien probe, and I got to see it like I was split in half visually. You know, I could see the X-ray and everything, and then I was in my bed. And I went right to sleep, which is very unusual. I know people are going, well, of course you went to sleep. Well, I have insomnia. It always takes me an hour or two to go to sleep. Well, I went right to sleep. Next morning, I woke up, and I thought, wow, they showed me what they're doing. I was on a ship, and I was really happy, and then I started crying. I couldn't figure out why I was crying. I cried for almost an hour, and at one of the points where I wasn't crying, I drew a picture of the really tall being that I had seen. Later that day, I went over to a friend's house and told him what had happened, and he didn't have much to say. And then I showed him the drawing, and I said, this probably discredits my experience completely, because I've never heard of anything like this. He looks at the picture, turns around, goes immediately to a webpage, and pulls up a drawing that's almost exactly like mine, and it's talking about the mantis creature.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a mantis. And I don't remember where I was going with all this.
This was just, you were talking about your, when you were taken, and I guess I wanted to ask you, what do you, how do you feel about these? Do you think that, what is their purpose? Do you have any idea? I'm sure you've talked to other people, and I've heard some people say that they're procreating with us, they're doing things to us. What do you take away from that?
Well, I have my opinion, but it may be information from them, because I had a big download in 2015 that seems to be surfacing a little bit. But I'm not human. My soul is not human, though I was born into a human body.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not die to come here. And not all of me was sent here. But I was supposed to learn what it was like to be a human. I was supposed to be a human until a certain point in time, which was then everything started being revealed to me. And people that call themselves Starseed, a lot of them are probably sent here. Some of them reincarnate here from death. Some of them come here from not having died. And we're here to help, to raise the consciousness of the planet first, mm-hmm. by raising our own consciousness, because it seems that everybody that finds out they're an abductee, or a great many of them, go into spiritual work, spirituality, and trying to raise their consciousness. And of course, right now, like, so many things are coming out of the shadows that it's almost scary. We know more of the truth than we've ever known before because of the internet and other things. So I think that's one of our purposes. And I think my specific purpose, one of the purposes, was to come here and write this book and talk with other abductees and help them be more comfortable with the situation.
But why are they taking us? Are they, in your humble opinion?
I think the world is going to shift into a fifth dimension, that the world is ready to evolve, and that some of us are going to go with it, but some are probably going to stay on the planet as it is, and it's just going to get worse and worse. It's sort of a mix of Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke and The Day the Earth Stood Still, with the one that Keanu Reeves was in.
Yeah,
but I don't think that they're going to destroy anything, whereas in those two movies they were going to.
Interesting.
I think we've done a good enough job at destroying
everything. So they're really
ourselves.
They're preparing us, some of us, that to go to. And I've heard this before many times, and I believe there is a great. The Earth is shifting. There's changing. There's no question. And the Earth, to me, is a conscious being, and it's choosing to do that. And so we can change with it, and go. Some of us will actually maybe go. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's, I've heard that theory before, that some of us will actually go, and there'll be like a new Earth, and then there also will be an old one where the chaos and hell are, not really that there's a hell, but it feels like it, And that's where a lot of people are going to stay because they don't want to shift their consciousness. That's interesting.
Yes, because they haven't and they can't. See,
and I also, don't you think, I want to ask you this, Byron, because you said you did some metaphysics. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but don't you think there's other beings, not just because you said the aliens saved you, but don't you think you sometimes have guardian angels or spirit guides that are around you helping you as well?
Not myself. I'm sure. Now, there are alien races that are called angelics, and they look like angels, and they are of a very high psychology or spirituality. So, that makes sense to me.
Okay.
But I think that it's all aliens in my life.
Cool. That's interesting. That's a different perspective. You know, I just guess I take in all of it because I interview people from so many different... I look at every possibility, and I never will stop looking at them. And the alien end of it, I absolutely believe because I've seen them since the ship, since I was a kid, and I've had strange things happen. So now that I think about it, I've probably been taken. And when you talked about, like, red marks, I noticed some of those recently, and I'm thinking, I was reading on here, and you... in some of the information you sent me, that you wake up and you thought you had spider bites. And I've noticed, like, in the last 2 weeks, I've got these red marks, different spots, you know, and I'm thinking, what the heck's going on here? Why am I breaking out or something like that? So maybe they're visiting. But see, I don't have any trauma. I don't feel, even if it's going on, it doesn't bother me. And is it something you wake up every day and you feel traumatized?
No, I don't. I wouldn't get rid of them from my life.
Really?
Because, for one thing, they saved my life, and I feel I'm one of them. Not all of them, but one particular race. I think I'm from the etheric realm, and our focal point, which really wouldn't be a planet, but you could, where we congregate or whatever live, is right where Earth is. Except it's in the etheric plane, and they can pop in and pop out. Now, that's what I experienced. And then just recently, the FBI has released some documents, and one of them is a letter from an agent to several scientists, the president, and a few other people. And he says, some of the aliens come from the etheric realm. They can appear here. They can go right back. When they appear here, they become material. And when they go back, they become less material. Now, I actually believe everything is material, but some of it is finer.
Mm-hmm. Higher vibration. Right. Less dense.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so, boy, that's interesting. And that makes sense, too, that they have to be multidimensional. They can't be hopping in ships. I guess they could. I mean, they could be traveling through wormholes. But also, I think we're being visited in many different ways, whether it's beings coming from other planets or just beings coming from other dimensional places. Or maybe they've evolved to the point where they can travel at will, you know. I think that...
Well, he said it's both. But he said they can all shift into the etheric realm. Now, there's one interesting thing that I realized the other day. You've heard you can create your own reality.
Right.
Or by thinking of things, you can then cause something to manifest in
your
reality.
Law of attraction.
Well, those thoughts, because thoughts are material as well, but those thoughts do that on the etheric plane.
Mm-hmm.
So they are in a place where they can make a clock or a spaceship simply by wanting it.
Now,
and when they shift it into our reality, it becomes physical.
Now let me...
And they don't even... Go ahead.
I just want to ask you, because we don't have a lot of time, and I'd love to do more on this because there's so much to talk about. And just by you talking, you're making me think of some things that I've gone through and I've dismissed. And I'm thinking, wait a second. You know, all of a sudden, I'm starting to think. It's like, you know, I always thought I maybe had contact, but I wasn't one of the ones that they take on a regular basis. But now I'm starting to think, I remember driving one time, and I wound up on a different road. I was with my buddies, but I was really sleepy. We had gone to a baseball game at Miller Park, the Brewers, and in Milwaukee, and we were driving back, and I know I was kind of falling asleep, and I'm trying to slap my face a little bit to stay awake. And the other two guys, we had a bunch of beer, and we were trying to sober up, which we shouldn't have been doing. And next thing I know, I'm on a different highway, and I'm thinking, how did I get here? Now, it could have been that I just was not paying attention, or maybe something placed me there. And like you, I've had several times where I could have been injured, and somehow, magically, I was transformed. And I always thought it was like, you know, beings from an angelic realm or spirit guides protecting me. Why would they protect me over someone else? Maybe because I asked them to. I think we set up our life and in accordance, and things will come along and always help us. We all have help, you know, and we just don't always realize it. Anyway, getting back to this, they're here to help us then. They're here to help us to take that next step. But why do they have to go through taking people and people having these scary memories of them?
Well, it's more than one group.
So each one has a different agenda, perhaps.
Probably. Just like humans, there are probably some that are not good.
Would you say the grays are not good, or would you say they're good?
Well, it depends on who they're working for. The grays are sort of, they're from what I've read, they're hired by all the different races. The grays work for anybody that wants them.
Oh, that would make sense. So that's why some people have really wonderful experiences and other people do not.
Yes, and some people's experiences are bad because of the way they perceive them.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that too.
Like, I've been hurt by doctors much more than I've been hurt by aliens, as far as I know.
Do you think you have any implants in you right now?
Oh, yes.
Do you know where they're at?
I have one in my head, on the side of my skull, up about 2 inches above my ear, and it puts out signals constantly through my that I hear, like tinnitus, except there are 3 different tones and rhythms in one ear and 2 different tones and rhythms in the other ear. Sometimes they go away, or actually they never totally go away. Sometimes they become one, sometimes they're 2, sometimes they're extremely loud. And I killed this implant one time.
You killed it?
Yes. I decided to see if I could get rid of it, and I looked up tinnitus, and I found this website that sells CDs with sonic frequencies on them to heal different parts of your body, probably by activating DNA or different ways. But they had one for getting rid of tinnitus, and they said to use it 3 times a week, if you could. And I went, I'm using it like 3 to 5 times a day. So I did. I used it every day. And after about 5 days, I woke up one morning and I go, well, something's different. And I realized that I didn't hear anything. It was the first time in my life that I have ever heard silence. All day long, I was sort of happy about it. And I thought, well, I killed the tinnitus. And that evening, I sit down to watch TV, and I'm watching a TV show. And then suddenly, it's a different TV show. I feel like I've had air pumped into my skull. My nose hurt like crazy, something had been shoved up into it. Everything was full blast, and then it all just was gone, except the tinnitus was louder than it had ever been. It was back, and louder than it had ever been in my life.
Oh, my goodness.
And So they had obviously come in and replaced it. Well, the next day it was loud, and I'm going through that all day, and I go, I can't handle this. Y'all have screwed up, and I want you to fix it. And I kept saying that. Now when I say sad, I kept thinking that over and over again. And I was getting ready to watch TV at about 7, and I had this strong, strong urge to go to bed. And I'm going, I don't want to watch TV. And then I could hardly keep myself up. So I go in the bedroom. I can't go to sleep. So I put on the CD to meditate. Well, my body, I can't tell I'm breathing all that well. It's like my body is asleep. And then I feel something like hands messing with my solar plexus. And it's like something is being adjusted, and all of a sudden the tinnitus just drops in volume back down to normal, and then everything's gone. I'm wide awake, and I'm not even sleepy, so I go watch TV. They had fixed it.
Interesting. Yeah, you know what, I guess we are more powerful than we realize, so we almost can take command of this situation, can't we?
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe we can't. You know, I guess people have told me our reaction to it is how, you know, we have a choice. And they will treat us in accordance to... there's a woman that I've interviewed. Her name's Marilyn Rubin. And she did a lot of research here in Michigan about people that were taken. And she said a lot of it has to do with your attitude and how you see yourself. And if you are not one of the victim mentality, you have the ability to project that, and they will treat you better.
Yes, and I've told lots of abductees that were having problems. I said, talk to them. Tell them what you don't like. I said, don't tell them to leave you alone, because they're not going to do that. But be reasonable and, you know, tell them, don't hurt me like this. And it's worked for them.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So the name of the book is Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. You're still having incidents going on to this day, right, Byron?
Yes.
And in Byron,
fact,
go ahead.
Day before yesterday.
Byron
day
Lacy.
Day before yesterday. I'm
go
sorry.
Go ahead.
I'll stop. No, you go ahead.
Byron Lacy is the author. Now, where are you from, Byron?
I was born in Burnett. I lived in Sigaville. I've actually lived in...
What state is
that? Dallas.
Near Dallas. Okay.
Texas.
I'm in Texas. Yeah, I thought it was a Texas accent. And I remember reading a little bit about you. So you're a Texan. I'm a Michigander. It's happening all over the world, isn't it? And you said one in four. You think one in four people, right?
Right. That's what researchers believe.
That's crazy, if that's that many. And I certainly could see that maybe I'm one of them. And I may be anybody that has an interest in these kind of things. If you have an interest in something, chances are there's a reason for it. So it was really wonderful to talk to you. Can we do this again sometime?
That would be great.
You have so much to say, and I just want to let you talk about it because you have some good stories, and it's really fascinating to hear. Thank you so much, Byron Lacy.
Thank you.